Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon. It's almost my favorite day of the week, Fri-yay, but we're not quite there yet. But I love being able to spend time with you prescribing hope for healthy families, because in this time of holiday rush, it can be easy to caught up in the hustle and the bustle and the stress and all of the things going on. But hey, for just the next hour, let's just all take a collective breath together. Let's really remember, my guest is already doing it. I am on fire today. I feel like this is already going to go well. Okay, and we are just going to remember the reason for the season, and we have some really important things to talk to you about. And I am so delighted today to have in studio one of my favorite guests in the history of ever. I have to say one of them because I have had my daughter on, so you know there's that. Guys, I've got my sister today back on the show. Many of you may have heard her before. I've got my sister, Amber Brown. Fun fact, we are both pediatric nurse practitioners. And fun fact, we could probably do a great performance of Sisters from White Christmas, like on the spot.
I've been preparing it for about a week now.
Okay. All right. That's what I thought. Okay. So maybe we'll do that after the break. But she is here with me because we're going to talk about some things that kids go through at the holidays. Holidays are a great time. They're supposed to be fun. They're supposed to be enjoyable. And we know that life isn't always ideal, and that these big holidays can produce big feelings for little kids, and it can be hard for them to manage that. And one of the things that we really have to remember is that a lot of times when kids are having trouble emotionally processing something, that usually is going to come out as a behavioral disruption. And usually we're thinking, okay, I do not have time for you to misbehave right now. But what we really need to know is that that's a cue. Our kids are trying to give us a message saying, hey, mom, hey, dad, I'm having trouble processing this situation. I don't have the words to tell you how I'm feeling. And so I'm just asking you for help. Now, some of the scenarios we're going to talk about today is, what if your child is experiencing a divorce situation and they're having to navigate going back and forth between two different families, or they're coping with the loss of a loved one? That can be something that families face at the holidays for sure. And so we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about, how do you manage strained family dynamics? What do you tell kids? What do you not tell them? And we'll also talk about tight finances and how much stress that kids can feel from that, because we think, oh, I don't want our kids to know that money's tight. Well, here's a newsflash. They probably know that money is tight. And so we'll talk about, what are some developmentally appropriate ways to have that? Mom to mom, sister to sister, NP to NP. It's just going to be great. Amber, I'm so happy to have you here.
Oh, thanks for having me back. I've been excited for quite some time.
Me too. And if you missed our previous shows, go and listen to that, because I will tell you, Amber and I sitting here is just a miracle. Like, I honestly could get a little teary just looking into your eyes right now, because we came from strained family dynamics. We went through some tough stuff. We were estranged for a while. And now here we are talking to you. So God is a God who can restore anything. And God is a God who loves to restore things that are broken. And so if you are heading into the holiday season and you're feeling the weight of those broken or strained family relationships, don't lose hope, because we're sitting here giving you a big dose of that today. I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
No, I actually feel shocked and in awe, honestly, because a lot of prayers got us to this point. And there was a time where I wanted a relationship with you, but I felt like that was really impossible. But I think it was really Granny's fervent prayers that allowed both of us the time, the space, the love to be able to accept and forgive one another. And then now look at our families, because it's not just a blessing for us. Obviously, to have a sister back is amazing. But
my face is leaking.
For our families to be able to grow up together again, get to know one another again, spend holidays together, that truly is a miracle.
It is a miracle. And in case you missed that, we do give all credit, most of the credit, to the prayers of our sweet granny who went to be with Jesus. This will be our second Christmas without her. But for all of you praying grandmothers out there, don't give up. Those prayers mean something. Those prayers matter. I'm getting goosebumps right now. She would tell us all the times that she was praying for us, that she was praying for that reconciliation. And that happened through a pretty miraculous story that we shared before. So somebody's going to have to go and listen to that if you miss it, because it is really one of the best stories. But let's just dive in, Amber, and let's talk about navigating our kids through these things, because we have experienced this personally at many of these scenarios. We've experienced these clinically as professionals coaching other kids through it. And so let's dive into scenario one. So I'm going to give you some parent questions that I've had listeners writing in just to ask me, what do we do? And so this is the parent question. This is our first Christmas since my spouse and I divorced, and my kids, they're 8 and 12. They're really struggling with the idea of splitting time between two homes. How can I make this season feel joyful for them while honoring their feelings? You want to take a first crack at that?
Sure.
Okay.
Something I would say first and foremost is kids really respond to how the mamas are feeling and how the mamas are portraying their emotions. We can never control the emotions of another person. We can only control the emotions of ourselves. And as a mom, one of the first things I would say would be to realize that this Christmas is going to look different. And I know that may sound silly and small and contrite, but we have this thought in our minds based on Instagram stories and seeing somebody's picture perfect Christmas, you know, it's not going to look like that, especially the first year after divorce. And that is absolutely okay. You can keep some of the old traditions that your kids love and make new traditions in these different houses. The kids at this age, 8 and 12, they're old enough to be able to sense those family dynamics. And these kids are going to have some big emotions. And like you said earlier in the show, they do come out as behavior changes. So what I would say is allow a lot of space and a lot of love and a lot of patience for kids to be able to express themselves in whatever ways that they may need to do, but also to talk to them and say, yes, our Christmases are going to look different, but they're still going to be amazing. What do you love to do? What are the traditions that you have loved in the past? Let's incorporate those and let's think of some new things that we want to do together this year as a new type of family.
I think that's a great suggestion. And for younger kids, they really need predictability. Mm-hmm. They need to know what's coming up. So as much as you can talk to them in a developmentally appropriate way, and this is a time, Amber, when we know it's best for kids to be shielded from conflict as much as we can, because we want to be honest with them, but they don't need to hear some, and some of that, you know, is out of your control. Like you said, you can't control the emotions of someone else, but as much as it depends on you, try to shield them from direct exposure, witness to that conflict, and have them have a predictable schedule. So just like you said, sitting down and having that conversation, it's going to look different, but what a great opportunity to create some new memories and to do some different things. And then giving them some space. I think a lot of times when kids have emotions following a divorce, particularly if there's one parent who really felt like they tried everything, you know, and it's just out of their control, they feel guilty when their kids are having negative emotions about that. How would you respond to parents who are just feeling guilty about their kids having to experience that?
That's a good question. I think for me, guilt and shame is probably another emotion that a lot of people experience after divorce. And there's a big difference between the two. Sure, we're going to feel guilty. Feeling guilty is, you know, kind of feeling bad for something that happened. Feeling shameful, though, is a different feeling. That is feeling like you are bad. And guilt is part of it, but I think that it is really important just to look in the eyes of your child and to see those traditions and to see the things that you can do. They just want you. Honestly, they just want you. They want a mom. They want a dad that is still full of joy at the holidays, even though things have been hard and even though things have been difficult. And just starting to ask them about what is important to you so that they feel seen and they feel heard. Because sometimes in a divorce, kids' voices kind of get drowned out sometimes because there is so much emotion and so much conflict. And it's funny the things that they may feel are really important to them that you didn't even know were important to them. I was asking my kids the other day which traditions they like the best so we could pick out, you know, those to make sure to do this year. And Emmy said, I want to do that last gift tradition. I had no idea what she was talking about. And so I was like, Yeah, tell me more about the last gift tradition. She's like, you know how when we're opening gifts and you always say, don't open that one, wait till last. I can't wait to do that. And I'm thinking in my mind like, oh my gosh, I need to go to Amazon or something. The big whatever that is. But that's really important to her. Now I know that. I didn't even know that was her tradition. So asking your kids and getting them involved. Yes, you're going to feel bad that things happen the way they happen, but God is so good. Mm-hmm. And God does not want us to feel shame and guilt and doubt. And the best gift you can give your kids is just your presence.
You just said my favorite two words together in the history of ever, but God.
I know that's your favorite. Yes,
exactly. It's my favorite because our kids are going to experience tough things in this world. And it crushes me a little bit to see parents who have been divorced put a special kind of pressure on themselves because our kids face all kinds of things that are beyond our control. And we have to teach them that God is in control, even when their world seems out of control. And you have to know that God made you that child's parent for such a time as this. He knows you have exactly what they need, and He gives you exactly what you need to get through that and to do that. And so I think just being kind with yourself, you know, and knowing that you are enough to be a good parent to your child at the holidays. I think that's really important. Another thing that I found really helpful for kids is that sometimes it's hard when they're going back and forth between two houses because there may be one set of rules here, one set of traditions here, one set of rules here, one set of traditions here, and kids are going back and forth and they don't want to hurt their parents. Mm-hmm. They don't want to say, oh, I had a good time, but they also don't want their parent to feel like they were miserable, you know, or they don't want to say, you know, that, oh, I wish that you had been there. I know it was hard for you. They know this may be hard because we had this experience and you weren't there. And so sometimes I think they don't want to talk about it. And then that can be hard for parents thinking, well, tell me about it. But I think giving them a safe space and saying, hey, I know some things may be hard to talk about. Here's a safe person that you can go to if you have feelings about that, especially for older teenagers, mm-hmm. whether that's somebody that you know and trust that they can go to. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think managing our emotions as parents is one of the most beautiful things you can do for your kids. Because like you said, kids want to please their parents, right? They just want their parents to be happy. And they've probably been living in a home for a while where it hasn't felt happy. So opening up yourself, you're going to have to put down your pride. And I know that hurts because there are so many hurt feelings when there's divorce. It can break you. And I know that that hurts. But giving the gift to your child of being open and allowing them to express those experiences, whether they were great or that they were not great, and you help them manage those either way. Because like you said, the happiness from a child sometimes even comes with their own guilt as a child, right? So it's just managing yourself first is the most important thing you can do so that you can model how to be emotionally regulated, and you can do that for your child.
That is such good advice. And ultimately, all of us are going to remind our children that the true meaning of Christmas isn't about where they are or what traditions they're doing, but who was born for us. And that is Jesus, the ultimate symbol of hope and love. No matter what your children are going through, that is a message of hope that resonates and that endures. And we can share the story of His birth as a reminder that even in uncertain times, God's love remains constant. Because I think even looking at the birth of Jesus, very uncertain times, very unexpected, less than ideal circumstances, and yet God moved in that. And so I encourage you to pray together as a family and ask God for peace and guidance in this new chapter. If it's a new chapter for you, or even if it's an old chapter, have the opportunity to make it a new chapter and to see a way forward. Because we're reminded that Philippians 4:7 says, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And trust that God is working in your family's life, even in circumstances that are less than ideal, even in circumstances that are changing. God is there He cares. He sees you. He knows you. He loves you. Well, when we come back, Amber and I are going to talk about something we're walking through pretty closely, coping with the loss of a loved one at the holiday and what you can do to help your kids manage that transition. So don't go away. We'll be right back with more from my guest, my very own sister, pediatric nurse practitioner, Amber Brown. Okay, we'll see you on the other side of the break. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. Daisy and her husband had decided they never wanted kids. And when she found out she was pregnant, she immediately thought abortion. But after she and her husband met her baby on ultrasound and heard the heartbeat, their hearts melted and they chose life. Her baby Jeffrey is healthy and beautiful, and Daisy and her husband can't even imagine life without him. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles a baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Welcome back, friends. That is Joy to the World by Chris Tomlin, and we're here today to bring you some joy to the world. I've got joy right here in my office. Let me tell you, it has been a tough couple of weeks for me, a lot going on, but joy just walked into my office today in the form of my very own sister, Amber Brown, and she is here. We're here to talk as moms. We're both NPs, we're both nurse practitioners, and we're talking about tough things that kids face at the holidays and how we can best set them up for success. Because let's be honest, Amber, when our kids are in the holiday and we're in holiday mode, we want our kids to be on their best behavior. Like we want all of our family to see like, oh yes, we've got it together. We're the good parent with the good kid, right? It never works out that way. And I find at the holidays, I have less tolerance for my kids' misbehavior. But what we've been talking about is that often misbehavior is one of the first indicators of emotional dysregulation. They're trying to tell you, hey, I got a big feeling here that I'm trying to process. I don't really know how to do that. And so we're going to talk about how to help our kids through that.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Well, let's jump into scenario two. Let me give you this question I had from a listener. So this listener wrote in and told me, we lost my father earlier this year. Our 10-year-old, her 16-year-old are finding it hard to get into the holiday spirit without their grandpa. How can I help them navigate their grief while still enjoying Christmas? Oh, I feel this one pretty deeply.
This is a tough one.
This is a tough one.
And since it's their first Christmas, I will say that sometimes when it's your first holiday without someone, it is okay if all you did was survive it. It is okay that if all you did was breathe through it. You don't have to make anything wonderful, beautiful, perfect the way that it was before, because it's forever changed, isn't it?
It is.
And so last year, after the death of our grandmother, mm-hmm. I don't think I had as joyful of a Christmas as we usually do, even though she loved Christmas very much. It was hard to even just get through that season. But this year I pledged I'm going to do better because she loved Christmas so much. I wanted to find ways that we could honor her. And I think for this listener, that would be a great way to incorporate, especially at this age, the age group that she's talking about, is finding ways that you can honor that person and bring them into your family traditions. So for instance, our grandmother made us an ornament every year of our lives, right? Something special. It had the year on it and she collected them all over the years until we got married and then she gifted them to us. So we still have ours over the years. Mm-hmm. And so this year, as a pledge to her and just as an honor to her, I bought a new Christmas tree and put all of the ornaments that she had made and put all of her nativities around that Christmas tree just as a space, you know, for us to honor her. And then, I don't know, you may want to do this too. We're going to make an ornament every year out of something of hers
that
we can put on the tree and then continue her tradition of doing an ornament per year so that it still shows honor and homage to her. So I think finding ways that you can incorporate your loved one into your holidays, because sometimes you may feel guilt for feeling joy when you feel like you shouldn't. Like someone, you know, that you love has passed away. I don't feel like I should be happy. But when I thought that for this year, I thought the last thing my grandmother would want is for me wallowing on the couch, right?
Oh, yeah.
And feeling sad and crying. And so I am trying to make a very concerted effort this year to make her proud, because she would say my first and middle name. You know how grandmas do. Oh, yeah. You know, they first and middle name you, and saying, this is not what I had in mind for you. Mm. And her joy for Christmas was so big. And so this year we are going to move forward. Even if you don't feel it, sometimes you fake it till you make it, right? Mm-hmm. But finding ways that you can honor that person and bring them into your traditions.
That is a great piece of advice. And I think the other thing that I think about in processing her loss, because I think about it, I mean, Amber, every year for, you know, a few decades now, right?
21.
Yes, 21
years.
I was going to say 29, but yeah, okay, for a long time, every Christmas Eve of our lives was her, you know, was with her. And it's so hard. And what I discovered is that, and I knew this already as a professional, but it's so different when you walk through it personally. Everyone grieves differently. Your children will grieve differently. Your spouse will grieve differently. Your siblings will grieve differently. It depends on your personality. It depends on just what you've experienced in life before. It depends on what kind of emotional capacity that you have at that moment for grief. So I would encourage this listener and anyone else who's struggling with that to give everyone grace and space to grieve in their own way.
And grief can change from moment to moment too. So you may feel like you're perfectly okay, and then you go do something Christmassy and you end up crying on the floor of Hobby Lobby. That did not happen to anyone here.
No,
I'm just saying
never.
Sometimes grief can change from moment to moment. It does, because smells will hit you, or a certain, you know, music will hit you. And so even showing grace in the moment to moment is important for yourself too.
It absolutely is. And I think a lot of times as parents, we feel a burden that we have to hide grief that we're experiencing because we don't want it to take away from our children's holiday experience. But their whole job is to create a construct of their own emotional safety. And they do that by looking at our emotions. They take cues from that. So we can't hide from them like we think that we can. They know when our eyes are sad. Mm-hmm. They know when our hands are sad. They know when our hearts are sad. Our steps are sad. I mean, they know us so well. So I think inviting them into your grief journey in a developmentally appropriate way is really powerful. I remember we had a great author before. She wrote a book, Come and Sit With Me. She's been on the guest before, Natasha. She talked about how her four-year-old daughter provided her so much comfort just by giving her a hug and just saying, I'm sorry, you're sad, mommy. And just knowing and showing them some coping mechanisms in that moment. Like, it's okay to cry for a minute as grief changes. It's okay. And then we're going to pick ourselves up, and then we're going to do whatever it is we need to do. We're going to call a friend. We're going to say a prayer. We're going to connect with family. I think those things are important.
I agree, because kids learn by seeing, and they feel so much for you, and they do want to show empathy. I remember Emmy wrote me a little note that she put on the refrigerator that said, I know you're sad about Granny. But she's in heaven now and she's okay. And I still have it on my fridge because it's just so kind. You know, it's just so kind. And she does see me cry about it a lot still, because I do miss her so dearly. And I don't mean to be in a kind of a morbid way, but we have to teach our kids to learn to navigate through grief, because one day they will experience grief of
a mother figure. I want her to know how to grieve, right? Mm. Because we come from seeing parents and grandparents who, in those generations, emotions were shut down. You weren't allowed to talk about it. Yes, you know, your uncle died. Go to school the next day, you know? And now we're learning that emotional regulation and grief and all of these things are a skill that you have to learn. And what better way to learn than seeing your mom go through it and that she was okay? And here are the different things she had in her toolkit in order to cope with it. So when she does have to experience that someday too, she knows those things that she can do in order to work her way through the grief.
Right? And it's amazing how kids in different age groups, because we, even infants and toddlers, can sense grief. They can experience loss. And that may be expressed through being more clingy or having separation anxiety or just differences in their personality and their temperament. And that can be really tough for parents to know. But whether they're an infant, a toddler, a preschooler, or a teenager who's being more clingy, again, when they have those developmental manifestations, it's really important to provide them a sense of connection, to stop what you're doing, to listen with your face, and to help them name and claim that feeling. Sometimes, I mean, have you ever had, so I've had you do this to me before, where you'll recognize a feeling that I'm having before I even realize that I'm having that feeling. You can say, you know, you might have said, oh, I can see this is making you really angry. And I might have a revelation then saying, you know what?
I am kind of mad.
That's exactly. Right. Like, I hadn't even thought about that before, but yeah, I am mad. And then it creates a door for you to be able to open and talk about that. And I think this is where we just get uncomfortable because, again, when people have negative emotions, especially when those people are our children, sometimes we want to shut that down because it gives us this subconscious feedback loop that we're not doing a good job with them as parents, because if we were being good parents and if we weren't so sad, then our kids wouldn't be so sad. And so I need you to stop being sad so that I stop feeling bad.
Right. But, you know, all behavior is communication. So when your kid is acting out, they're not giving you a hard time. They're having a hard time. And it seems kind of counterproductive with children because they may hit you or kick you or do these things. That is their way of saying, I need to be close to you. So it is in those moments that you need to draw them closer rather than go to timeout. This behavior is not acceptable. You know how we just do. Right?
I've never done that, ever.
No, I've been guilty of that lots of times. And it can be hard to find that compassion because the way that kids do demonstrate that they're in distress is different. But you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, maybe not. Because we have a whole generation of what we call Karens, right? Where grown people are throwing fits when they're upset.
True.
And I can think of lots of times where I've had a semi-fit when I'm upset about something very small, right? Like your pocket gets stuck on a drawer. How many times that happened where you can just like rage on that? I know. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. I'm like, I am acting like a toddler. But we expect these 1-2-year-olds to control their behavior when they don't even have a frontal lobe or their brain yet. So when you're a kid, you think it's giving you a hard time. Really, they're having a hard time and they're trying to tell you, I desperately need connection. And will you still love me no matter what my behavior looks like? Mm-hmm. So draw them a little closer once they're not scratching and biting at you, right? They just need a little more connection.
I know. And that's so hard to realize, but it is exactly. They're seeking physical connection. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I think is important is the language that we use. And sometimes we use euphemisms or we try to use soft language like grandma's gone to sleep. Well, for kids.
Okay, you can't do that.
Okay, go ahead. Okay. I'll let you take it. You clearly feel passionate.
Unless you want a child that never sleeps ever again because they are terrified that once they go to sleep, they too will never wake up, okay? Or we will not see them again. Especially in the preschool age where things are very concrete, you cannot use things like, or grandma went on vacation. That child will never want to go to vacation, no matter how exciting it looks like, because that person never came back, right?
Right. Well, and sometimes it can be hard because we forget what it's like to be a kid and they don't understand that this person is not coming back. Mm-hmm. And so they may ask you about it over and over and over again. Know that that is developmentally normal. It is normal for them to have trouble understanding that. So understanding the finality of that, that can be a really important milestone in helping a child to navigate grief.
Absolutely.
And then school age kids, you know, that can be really hard because they have a lot of questions. And just like preschoolers have questions, at school age, their questions get harder, honestly.
And a little stranger, to be quite honest. Yes. They want to know every detail of everything and may ask you questions that you don't feel like would be socially appropriate, but they're just in front of you. They may want to know, you know, what happens to the body of someone or yes. how do they get buried? Like, they want to know the intricate details right. of those things. And it is okay to explain that in a developmentally appropriate way, of course, but school-age kids get a little weird about this part.
Because they're such concrete thinkers. Yes. That's how God designed their brains. Right. They think about the nuts and bolts of everything, the physicality mm-hmm. of all of it. So that can be, yeah, those are awkward conversations sometimes.
Agreed.
But, you know, actually, the age group that often has the hardest time dealing with death is teenagers. Mm-hmm. That can be really, really hard for them because they may understand that death is permanent, that it's final, but they really struggle with those emotional aspects because they don't yet have long-term thinking and they're just thinking like, this isn't fair. Like this, and then they're also starting to develop their own spiritual beliefs. And so that's where those questions where you might think the school age questions about some of the physicality is awkward, but teenagers are going to ask deep questions like, how can a good God allow this to happen? Mm-hmm. How do you recommend meeting teens in that point of need? Sure.
So I think teens still, you have to realize, are still egocentric. They think, why did this happen to me, right? These are some big conversations you're going to need to have. But the thing is, you have to be delicate because teens, when they are stressed, when they are sad, it often comes out in anger. Mm-hmm. And that can sometimes make parents angry with, you know, you experience the same loss. How could you be yelling at me? You know, my mother or my grandmother just passed away. That is, again, the way that toddlers tantrum, teens get angry. Giving them some space and some time, but always coming back. Because with teens, a lot of times they'll see how unlovable they can be before you will not come back and before you won't love them. Of course, we will always love them, but they don't in their minds know that. So give them some space, give them some time, and then come knocking back on the door and checking in.
Absolutely. And so some things that are really important, no matter what age or stage or what kind of loss you've experienced, are just being present. Honestly, just being available to listen and to provide comfort, what you're doing is you're shutting off that cascade of stressful hormones that are bathing their brain, and you're providing them the building blocks of resilience. So don't underestimate the power of a hug or a comforting word and just being there. The number one predictor of resilience after hardship in childhood is having a meaningful connection to a connected, caring adult. And for us, definitely our granny, which makes it so much harder to lose her. But other things that you can do are normalizing grief. Just let your kids know it's okay to have feelings about that and that those feelings are going to come and go. And yes, we wish it wasn't so, but this is the reality and we're going to get through it together. Give them stability as much as you can, being consistent in your routine. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, having bedtime every night at 8, but it might mean saying a prayer for them every night before they go to bed, wherever that is or whatever time that is. Giving them some consistent routines in a loving environment really can help them feel secure. And use faith-based messages. This is such a great time to reinforce the fact that, yes, in this world we will have trouble, but we can take heart because we have a hope that doesn't disappoint. And we know each child's grief journey is unique, just like yours is. So meet them where they are and find comfort in the hope that we have forever. Well, when we come back, we'll talk about strained family dynamics and strained family finances. What do you do with those? More with my sister Amber when we come back. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls.
One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long may the world in sin and error pining till he appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn.
Welcome back, friends. That is O Holy Night by Crowder and Passion. And that Holy Night, our remembrance of it, is coming up quick. We are really close to Christmas, and I'm so delighted to have gotten a Christmas gift early today in the studio. I have the presence of my sister, who I love and adore, my baby sister. No, really.
Okay, thanks.
You are one of the most important people in my life, Amber. I do not know how I would do this life without you. I just love you so much, and I just want to say that in front of God and everybody, literally.
Oh, you made a public declaration.
I did.
I feel loved.
I did, and it's been so fun, you know, for us to have our journey together of healing, personal healing, and also to have this professional skill set as both as pediatric nurse practitioners. And yes, we have another sister actually who is not one, and so shout out to her. She's business, so she takes care of all of the money and everything, and she's like, oh yes, you have that bond together. Yes, we do. But we are all three very close. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting for us to talk about navigating these things personally and professionally. And so today we're talking about how do we help our kids get through Christmas? Because Christmas brings a unique set of circumstances that are not there. So we've been going through some scenarios, losing a loved one, and just the difficulty of that, or if you've experienced divorce. Our scenario three, our question three from a parent is strained family dynamics. This is the parent question. We're hosting Christmas this year, but we have an uneasy relationship with my extended family. We are not around them very much, and the dynamics there are not really healthy. I'm worried about my kids picking up on the negativity. The younger ones don't know anything about the tension. How can I shield them and create a positive experience for everyone? So do you feel like solving world peace today, Amber?
Yes, I'm going to attempt.
All right, good. Let's do that.
All right. So the first thing I will say is, and this takes time to learn, of course, but you do not owe the gift of your presence to anyone over Christmas except your children and your family. If you do decide to go to these types of families that are strained with some tension there, then having a family meeting, I think, is really important before you go, so you can set up some rules and some boundaries for what is acceptable to each person there. Okay. I will always protect my kids, right? And kids are not responsible for other adults' emotions. So they also do not owe an adult a hug, a kiss, a smile, a Merry Christmas, a thank you, I love this awful sweater. They don't owe that to adults. So do I want my kids to be well-behaved? Of course I do. Of course I do. But I think that adults have a very unrealistic developmental expectation of children, especially at Christmas time.
I agree. And, you know, I was going to say, I'm just writing down something that you said that reminded me of something, because, I mean, we're not talking about manners here. There's such a thing as good manners. Sure. We all want our kids to be good mannered, but we're talking about intentionally taking them into a situation that we know is strained and yet expecting them to act with more emotional maturity than we feel perhaps equipped to act on our own. Sure. That's just not a realistic expectation.
And if you look at that situation from far back a little bit, I am going to take my child into a house full of adults that they do not remember or don't know or see not very often. This old uncle is going to come up to you and expect you to kiss him on the cheek for Christmas.
Or the lips.
Okay. And you are to do that because that is polite. I would never ask my child to do that with some person I see. Never. So expecting that out of a child, that's frightening, honestly. But I'm thinking it's normal at a Christmas holiday, right?
Yes, Uncle Bob. Like, go to the library and, you know, some guy helped you with a book and you're like, okay, now give them a kiss.
I know. And I just feel like we expect our kids to look perfect and, you know, go in looking a certain way and feed them full of junk and Oreos and icing and cake and food. And you act right, though.
And
know?
No nap.
Right.
And after traveling.
And overstimulation.
And wearing an outfit that's itchy.
And weird gifts. You know, fruitcakes, lots of fruitcakes. And expecting these children to behave when you don't want to be there either. Okay, so if you don't want to be there, what makes you think your child's going to want to be there? But practically, I know we're joking, but practically, you know, letting your child know before you go that you will get them out of any situation that they are uncomfortable in. Yeah. Sometimes having a keyword or a safe word, something that's kind of silly that you know you can bring up. So that child can signal to you if they're afraid to say in front of Uncle Bob, I do not want to kiss you on the lips, strange man. I have not seen in 3 years. And that way you can safely get them out of that situation.
Absolutely. And a lot of times what I see for school age kids or older, you know, they may have older relatives who start asking them questions because, oh, maybe I don't feel comfortable asking your mom about this, but kids, hey, they'll tell anything. Mm-hmm. So let me start asking, hey, why doesn't your mom ever come around? Hey, why don't we ever see you? And I think coaching them to say, you know, that's a question that you should ask my mom. Mm-hmm. And then just let me go find her. Like, just exactly like that. That's what I would coach kids to do. Sorry. And now I guess I was laughing so hard. I was crying here. I can't even see now. But one of the things that I wrote down from what you said is that reminds me, and something that I tell myself all the time, is don't let emotional manipulation hold you relationally hostage. You know, and sometimes we put some of those expectations on ourselves, and maybe we think, hey, we want to go and we want to show that, hey, I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. I'm, you know, healthy. I'm good. And I want you to see that I have worth, or, you know, those kinds of things. And sometimes if we're really honest, Amber, and this is stepping on my own toes, we project those onto our kids and we want them to make a good show. We would never think this like consciously. I mean, we're not sadistic and being parents, but we think, oh, maybe if my parents see how good my kids are, you know, and how well they're doing in school, or how smart they are, how sweet they are, how funny they are, whatever their gifts are, like, oh, maybe that will be the key to this relational issue. And that's just not a fair pressure to put on them.
No, it isn't. And that's expecting a lot out of your kids. But if you're going into a toxic family dynamic like that, and this is something I wish I had told younger self, you don't have to go. Okay, you do not have to go. Now, are they going to be mad? Yes. But were they mad when you were there anyway?
Yes.
Okay, was everybody upset? No.
No.
No. I would spend weeks trying to pick out the perfect gift and it was still somehow terrible. Okay. However, you have to rationalize that within yourself and talk as a family and decide, is this worth our emotional sacrifice? Yes. And if it isn't, it's okay not to go. And if you need somebody to tell you, it's okay not to go. We are here today to tell you.
It's okay not to go.
Yeah. Because if it is causing more harm in yourself, more harm in your family, more harm in your relationships, there's no point.
You know, the phrase that I use with this is emotionally expensive. And sometimes,
that's what
you
I was
know,
looking for.
Yes. It's beautiful. It's too emotionally expensive to go. Now, obviously, we can't speak to all the complexities of the dynamics, but sometimes it's just too difficult. And you know, if you go, it's going to cost you a lot. And I remember one time after, you know, having a family conflict. I remember my husband seeing me on the recliner, just on the phone, trying to manage the conflict, because that's what happens. You know, you go and then you have all these phone calls, and I was just weeping. And he came out with a digital camera and took a picture of me. I was so mad because we didn't have smartphones then. This was a while ago. And I looked at him and I said, why would you do that?
Oh, I'm mad at him, and it didn't just happen.
I mean, really, because I looked terrible, right? My eyes are all swollen. Like, I'm in my, you know, mismatched jammies, just like sitting there on the recliner. And you know what, Amber, though? He loved me enough to turn around the camera and say, this is what our children are seeing right now. You need to see what they are seeing. They are seeing you grieve the life that you will never have while the life you do have is passing you by. And that was transformational for me. And I realized that some things I needed to reserve that emotional energy for my kids because they deserved it. They didn't ask for any of that situation. And I had to have them, I had to leave that for them.
Yeah.
But it's really hard. But I think for younger kids, if you are going to go, it's best to keep it short and keep it scripted. Like, know exactly, we're going to go at this time, we're going to leave at this time. Let them know what to expect. And for older kids, you know, you can be honest with them because they're going to pick up on if it's tense. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have to tell them every nitty gritty detail of everything that ever happened, but just say, you know what, I wish that our relationship was better, but there are some things in it that just make it really hard. And so if you feel awkward, just come and find me and I'll talk with you and I'll answer anything that I can. But it's helpful, especially for older kids, if you give them something to do when they get there.
Oh, sure.
Like maybe they serve dessert or maybe they're answering the door. Giving them an activity is better than just like sitting awkwardly on the couch and like thinking, what am I doing here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Have them play with the kids. That's a fun one. Or do like bingo for the kids, or you know, like something where they can feel a part, but then also can leave whenever they're ready.
Exactly. And follow up with them and just say, hey, so how did that feel? What did you see? What did you notice? And just give them some space to process that feelings, because the truth is we need space to process those kinds of experiences. Absolutely. Too. And so it can be really hard, but this is a great time to talk to our kids about the principles of forgiveness and grace. Like, we can still have forgiveness with boundaries. Like, it's okay to have healthy boundaries, but it's not okay to have a bitter heart. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to hold on to anger or hate, and it's always, always okay to take those tense family relationships to the Lord in prayer, because you never know.
Yeah.
When he might restore those like he did for me.
Amen.
Amen. Okay. Well, let's move on to the last scenario, because I have one more listener question that I want to get to. So this is tight finances. This year has been financially tough. We can't afford the gifts or activities my kids are used to. I know they are really worried about our finances, and they understand our situation. I'm sure, you know, kids do, and they say it's okay, but I still feel guilty. How can I help them still have a meaningful Christmas? What do you think?
Well, when my kids were little, or actually we were just watching this on TV the other day. So my kids like to take my cell phone and then they like to scroll through old videos, and they were looking at Christmas videos. And there was this one Christmas that they were looking at on the video. It was when they were little, and they were playing with this ball and they were just bouncing it back and forth and just laughing and delighting. And how, and they were both sitting on the couch like, oh, you remember that ball? I loved that ball. It's a $5 Walmart ball. Okay. And I looked around in the video at the tree, and I remember there was only like three or four, like not very many presents that year. That was a very, very tough year for me. Emmeline's medical bills were absolutely astronomical. My business was pretty new. And that was a year I struggled to put a Christmas together for them. And as I was watching the video, I'm crying. They're just laughing at the ball that they had, right? But I'm crying. And so Emmy looked over and she's like, what's wrong, Mom? And I'm like, I was honest with them. You know, I said, look, that Christmas, there wasn't a lot I could do for you guys. And I feel really bad about it now. And so my older, Caden, he said, Mom, we don't remember any of that. We all remember that ball and how fun that ball was. And they played with it for hours. And that's something I have to let go for myself. Kids don't remember things like we remember things. Mm-hmm. Kids don't always want tangible things. They want experiences. They want to remember things. So I don't, now that I look back at that, I still feel some shame and guilt over that. And that's something that I as an adult have to work my way through, but they don't feel any of that. That Christmas to them felt so joyful because that ball must have really been really fun. You know, it cost me seriously $5. But that's what they remember. And that's what they're taking back from that Christmas. So creating those memories, and it doesn't have to cost really anything.
You know what I see in that is God's grace. That God even works through a $5 Walmart ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, even looking back at that video, they didn't have that perception of the Christmas. They didn't see the tree and think, oh, it wasn't as, you know, big, or there weren't as many presents or anything. All they remembered was that you loved them and that you were there. And the fact that you cared, I mean, that is just, that is really precious. And, you know, one of our favorite movies, I know you love this movie too, is Little Women. I know. I like, we should get
that
off the
and
show
Anna
and
Green
go.
Gables. I know,
we should go watch them both. Okay. We'll do that this afternoon. Okay. But Little Women, you know, you think about their Christmas, where they had their little Christmas, which wasn't, you know, super extravagant, but they're all sitting around the table and they all know they're going to go and they're going to take their Christmas to the people who need it more. I think that is one of the greatest things that we can do. No matter how little we think we have, there's always someone with less. Mm-hmm. And it is truly more blessed to give than to receive. And so I think that is really helpful. And if you have older kids, invite them into a creative solution. Just tell them straight up, hey, we do not have the money to provide Christmas gifts this year. So what do you think we could do instead? What's something that we could do? And you might be surprised at how creative your kids are. Well, I hope that this hour has been as much of a gift to you as it has been to me. I love Heart to Hearts with my sister. We talk about this kind of stuff all the time. And so welcome to our musings and how we want to help kids. Our passion is to have kids just be the healthiest and the happiest that they can and to find joy in the season. And listen, wherever you are, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And I'll see you right back here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.